and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. Think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their mind, getting so much resistance from behind. I think it stops, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life. It will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You know, it's still going down. Free speech. Violent reaction, government suppression, government lies, false flag attacks. It's the way of the world in the 21st century, just as it was in the 20th and before. But if we are vigilant, we can see through it. And if we can see the truth, we can look for ways to change the way things are to the way we want things to be. That's what our new American dream is all about. Join us here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Remember, the network is listener supported, so head on over and buy something or kick in a donation. Hey, maybe you'd like to have an archive of all of our 2014 shows all together on a disc. They'll do that for you. Ask them. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palaszczuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Kindly welcome special guests Larry Pinkney, Anthony Race, and M.K. Davis, and Phil Ferruggio. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Port Orange, Minneapolis, Chicago, Benton, Mississippi, and wherever you are. Americans are a pitifully misinformed people. All of history is a history of false flag operations. Yet Americans dismiss such proven operations as conspiracy theories, which merely proves that government has successfully brainwashed insouciant Americans and deprived them of the ability to recognize the truth. Americans are the foremost among the captive nations. Who will liberate them? This is from Information Clearinghouse article, The Charlie Hebdo Story Simply Doesn't Wash, by Paul Craig Roberts. I want to mention a book I'm reading by Dave McGowan, M-C-G-O-W-A-N, Programs to Kill. I'm reading the book. It's not new, but new to me. I think it's an important book and gives us more insights into how far this whole false history, false reality has gone and for how long. Maybe I'll have something more to say next week. But now I'd like to share this with you. You know some of my story. In the 1980s, Ruth and I lived in a resistance community in Omaha. We left in 1989 after my last stint in jail. Anyway, the following is the thread of a recent email conversation I had with Kevin McGuire, who still lives in Omaha. We were best friends, went to jail together, occupied the cathedral asking for sanctuary rather than appearing in court in order to put pressure on the bishop to denounce the nuclear command at Offutt Air Force Base, et cetera, lots of stuff. Well, haven't we often wondered why don't liberals, liberal media, et cetera, understand what we are doing and join us? Well, I know I have. And I just offer this as some sort of insight into the liberal mind. I considered myself a liberal a radical years ago. I don't know what I am now, but it doesn't matter. I just don't understand what the hell happened. Why don't the millions like Kevin seem to get it? Well, here's a clue from Kevin, though I can't say that I really understand it even yet. This is me to Kevin. Here is the cover from my next book. I got 5 coming out this year. They will be featured in Hold Tight magazine out of Toronto. Here's the cover. And then we have been working on these books for the past year and can't seem to get it done, have a chance, but slow going. This is from a letter I sent out trying to find someone to help with the layout. We have a nonfiction book project that we have been working on for over a year now, and we are stuck. We have a 3-book project. Nobody Died at Sandy Hook also deals with the Boston bombing. Number 2, I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, about fake moon landings, death of Paul McCartney, the Holocaust. The 3rd, no title yet, but we'll feature the nuking of the World Trade Center towers on 9/11. Seems like everything is a conspiracy these days, I continue. I kind of think that's true. Hard to understand for sure, but probably true. And then I had a link to the New York City policeman shooting. Well, that's about all I know. Going to watch the Big Lebowski now for about the 500th time. Kevin responded, Mike, unclear about what to say about the strange crap you are writing these days. And they're the crazy old friend, very smart, talented, etc. Used to say that meetings were not for communication. Just faced off and waited for your turn to talk, so I will not try to reach you here, but it will say that it is very hard to make the effort to stay in touch. Sounds like you are a tool of the right-wing gun freaks, Sandy Hook deniers, and the neo-Nazis, Holocaust deniers. I'm not much of a conspiracy guy personally, but would say that you definitely do write like you are part of a conspiracy, and one with which I am very uncomfortable. Your new friends are my enemies. You be good, old friend Kevin. And I responded, thank you for at least saying what you feel. The reason you are unclear is because you have not done your homework. And it has nothing to do with right wing, left wing. That is such outdated terminology. It has to do with the government, the elite making us look like fools and turning us into a police state. If you studied, you would know about 9/11, Oklahoma City, Sandy Hook, Boston, the New York City cops, France. The real wars for the mind, information. It is the most important battle ongoing. It is the whole shooting match. You seem to be lost in stereotypes. Someone told you that doubting the official stories of these events was not something a classic liberal does, and so you believe that. Actually, it's all the same as it ever was. It's fighting the power. But, Kevin, you cannot fight if you're unarmed, which you are if you do not study. You have to study and not the Omaha World Herald. You actually have to go to the Internet. You just have to, or you will not know what is going on in the world. You are ignorant. I can't believe I'm saying this to you, but it's true, and they have you. You believe the story that the TV news and the government gives you. You, of all people, should know that these people have no boundaries, nothing they will not do. Please try to think outside the box. It's the only hope you and we have. And then I sent one more, but I have not heard back from Kevin. Nothing more back from Kevin McGuire in Omaha, an old dear friend of mine. And finally, regarding the new movie, American Sniper, about how cool it is to kill people, a coworker where I work said how sad it was that this guy died the way he did when he got home by another guy on a shooting range, then coming home and getting killed that way after killing all those people to make our people safe. Well, you really cannot make this stuff up. Americans are a virus with shoes. Well, then, it is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel. All we need is more vodka radio hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. And so let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Feel your peasant hands with the warm drink and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The New American Dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions.
The sign on the peeling kitchen wall of Union Number 479 Pipe Fitter Shop read, 4 days, 19 minutes since the last false flag terror attack. Joe, the pipe fitter apprentice, sat down to lunch with the other guys, swinging a leg over the bench seat and said, oh, these freaking hoaxes. That walks like a duck, sounds like a duck, you know? And Al, who'd been in this same shop for 35 years, said, nah, that's a pig rookie. I look, walks like a duck. And Sal added, nah, that's an elephant. So it quacks like a duck. They all shut up and ate their sandwiches and looked over at the black and white TV on the counter by the microwave for their very favorite daytime drama with almost military precision presented by Dove soap for your hands, for your butt, for your face. Dove soap in earth tone. Good for the earth. Good for you. The pipe fitters from Union Shop Number 479 ate and chewed in silence, watching the main character Fernando swooping in to the formal dining hall to pronounce, the entire world is held hostage by very rich terrorists who make sure people think they're heroes while killing poor people and calling them terrorist threats. Joe and Al and Sal and the Mariucci brothers and the others ate sandwiches and Fritos and watched the rest of the show, and then because they were a union shop, they got a full hour lunch if they wanted. During the commercial, some went to the can, some went outside and smoked, but they all made it back to the picnic table in the kitchen for the start of their next show. And now, the new daytime TV game show that's sweeping the nation, Chicken Little Says. Chicken Little Says, the sky is falling. Chicken Little Says, look out for Uncle Jihad with his big ugly finger pointing out from the poster on the sidewalk saying, I want you for ISIS. Chicken Little says, look out for Herman the German. Look out for Nip the Jap. Look out for Rostov the Ruski. Look out for Al-Qaeda, Bob-Qaeda. Look out for commies, red, criminal, liberal, homo, and bigots. Chicken Little says, is that Ebola in your pocket or are you just glad to see me? ISIS, Ebola, Ottawa, fence jumpers and hackers, and Frenchmen and Aussies and ISIS and Eustace and Mises and Lasis. Oh, my. And because they were union and because this was Al's last day, they stayed sitting, even after the boss man walked through the kitchen staring at them. And now, the other new daytime TV game show that will be sweeping the nation tomorrow, hosted by Howie Mandel, Steve Allen, Bob Barker, Chuck Barris, Drew Carey, Johnny Carson, Dick Cavett, Dick Clark, Hugh Downs, Ralph Edwards, Bob Eubank, Joe DiRaggiola, Art Linkletter, Groucho Marx, Ed McMahon, Jack Parr, Burt Parks, Gene Rayburn, Pat Sajak, Vanna White, and Alex Trebek, the new TV game show that's sweeping the nation, beheaded and buried at sea. Followed on most of these stations by Whose Head Is It Anyway? And in some time zones, if not preempted by local terror news, Who Wants to Be Buried at Sea? And after somebody pulled out a pint of Old Smoking Leather to celebrate Al's retirement, and then somebody pulled out a couple tins of sardines, and they knew they weren't going anywhere today, they stayed sitting to watch. Oh, what a perfect day in a perfect town, in a perfect house, on the perfect side of the street. Another episode of Sitting on the Floor at Ward Cleaver's Feet, listening to Ward Cleaver. Ward Cleaver speaks, Remember the peace dividend? They didn't want peace. Remember the first fake World Trade Center bombing? That was our baptism to fear Muslims. The Patriot Act, anthrax, Wellstone, the Department of Homeland Security modeled on the East German Stasi. A lot of thought has gone into all of this, Beaver. Manifest destiny, the American century, American exceptionalism, globalization. Or as Madeleine Albright put it, the indispensable nation. While others, less kind, have used the term imperialist. Oh my, such webs of deception these spiders weave. If Sandy's Hook could be ripped open for total exposure to the germicidal light of sunshine, it can only tear asunder numbers of other episodes of total law corruption. Once started, this tornado won't stop until it lands at the foot of the real guilty party. Steve, let me tell you, there's nothing like the smell of noose corpses dancing in the dappled light of morning. Oh, what a perfect day in a perfect town, in a perfect house, on the perfect side of the street. Sitting on the floor at Ward Cleaver's feet, listening to Ward Cleaver.
And now our first guest of the night is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis is a Bigfoot researcher, among other things. He lives in Denton, Mississippi, and he will be joining us just as soon as we can get him on the line. M.K. Davis has done extensive research into the Patterson-Gimlin film, for one thing.
Hello.
Well, hello, this is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Oh, good, good. Well, I'd just like to say welcome to everybody to 2015. The crypto zoo is full. And, you know, there's a lot of crypto animals in the crypto zoo. There's lake monsters, there's living dinosaurs, flying pterosaurs in Texas, thunderbirds, chupacabras. But, you know, Bigfoot still tops the list in 2015. And as frustrating as it is, people that search for Bigfoot will tell you, you know, that they try just about everything that they think might possibly work. And it ends up being frustration. And so, but you know, 2015 holds some promise. You know, there's new technology. Drones, for instance, drones have become inexpensive, or you know, within the reach of the average person, and they're very technical. Some of those drones can have as many as 12 rotors, and they carry the high definition cameras. They can be programmed to fly autonomously. So this it seems that the drones are a promise, you know, that maybe possibly somebody might get Bigfoot on a aerial camera. But what happens? The government steps in. The government has banned the use of drones in national wildlife areas. So you can't use a drone to look for Bigfoot in any of those places that are considered national wildlife areas. one step forward, two steps back, and that's frustration, the type of frustration that people who search for Bigfoot experience. Now, Bigfoot is still, you know, like I said, it's at the top of the list. There's a lot about Bigfoot that has not been really settled amongst researchers, and Bigfoot is described in many different ways. Some describe it like it's a human-like. Some people say they put a gun up to it and they're going to shoot it, but they couldn't do it because it looked too much like a human. And others describe it as ape-like, like it's a, you know, like a version of a gorilla, a North American version. Now, some people say that Bigfoot has leaves tracks that display a full complement of five toes. Other people say only four toes. And then some people say, especially down here in the South, that Bigfoot has three toes. Now, the four-toed version of it is more common in the very northern parts, like in northern Canada, in that area. And they're kind of related to a very large version of the Sasquatch, a version that goes 10-foot plus. And then, you know, your five-toed one would be on one like on the Patterson film. And then your three-toed would be like the Boggy Creek Monster, the Legend of Boggy Creek. It would be a really strange subject. And so people really haven't, they really haven't come together on exactly what a Bigfoot is. Or, and there may be several versions of Bigfoot. There may be several things they call Bigfoot. Now, some say Bigfoot is a biped, only walks upright. And others say Bigfoot is a quadruped, which goes down on all fours. And down here in the South, of course, you know, that's commonly reported. Now, some people say that Bigfoot is a huge barrel-chested, truncated creature, and other people say that Bigfoot is narrow-waisted and broad-shouldered. Some people say Bigfoot is shy and retiring, and some people say Bigfoot is aggressive and dangerous. Well, the Hoopa tribe told me that if you encounter a Bigfoot in the woods, speak to it in the language that you know and slowly back away. Now, that tells me, or at least it suggests, that they don't think that Bigfoot is, you know, that shy and retiring, that maybe perhaps there might be an element of danger there. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. Now, Bigfoot, some people say they have fangs or long eye teeth, and others say they have the big squared off teeth all the way around the mouth. And some people say that Bigfoot has splayed toes of equal length at the end of the track. But others say that it's more like a human foot, just larger. Now, some people say that Bigfoot has eye shine, that you could shine it, it will light up like a deer or like a rabbit. And others say that Bigfoot has self-luminous eyes, so that you don't even have to shine a light at it at all for it to light up. And I know some people who said that they have seen them in the darkness with them. Of course, that's something that's yet to be proven, and there's so many things about Bigfoot that we look forward to 2015, and perhaps we may find some resolution. A lot of people are gathering evidence. There's been some videos taken already that are out on the internet. So, you know, we're looking forward to maybe getting some of these things to a point where we can agree exactly what it is that we're chasing, what we're after. You know, Bigfoot is an enigma. It's become synonymous with unsolvability. And, you know, all you have to do is just say to somebody, well, I'm chasing Bigfoot, or I'm looking for Bigfoot, and you'll see what I'm talking about. They'll roll their eyes and kind of wag their head a little bit and say, okay, you know. But, you know, it's considered like the world's biggest waste of time. Is that the music?
No, not yet. You got a little bit longer.
Okay. And you know, it's a doable thing. I think that the, you know, with the technology that we have now, we have a lot of good communication, which is really important. Is that, you know, that people don't have to write a letter and wait 2 weeks to get the letter. They can share information almost instantly, even to the point of a picture. If they took a picture with a cell phone or some of the newer model smartphones, you know, you can just email it right there from the spot up to YouTube or or share with the world or with other individuals. So we kind of hope maybe that with a combination of things, with the technology we have now, we have with these drones, with other technologies, with game cams, with inexpensive, high-quality video cameras, and everybody's getting FLIR. FLIR used to be way beyond the price of the average fellow, but now lots and lots of researchers have, you know, the heat-sensitive cameras that can spot an individual out in the cold darkness of the night. So maybe with all of that going, Bigfoot may be found in 2015, and I sure hope so. It would be nice to take at least take him off the top of the list and move on to other things in the crypto world, in the crypto zoo, that we have you know, so many interesting and fascinating things. So that's kind of where we're at with Bigfoot. Do I have, how many more minutes do I have?
You probably have about a minute more.
Okay. We can talk. I could talk all night about Bigfoot.
Well, why don't you?
You know, Bigfoot has been a favorite subject of mine, and one of my fortes has been, you know, working on the Patterson Bigfoot film, and that's how I kind of backed into Bigfooting. And when I say backed into it, I was interested in the photography of the film, and I wanted to improve it, and just to see if the film would tell its own story. And I think largely it has. You know, I'm pretty convinced that that is a genuine, authentic Sasquatch, whatever a Sasquatch is.
Okay. Can you remind our listeners where they can find you on the web? And then I think we'll be about done.
Okay. Well, you can find me on the web at it's the Davis Report. It's a WordPress blog site. And you can also find me on YouTube. I'm under GreenWave FB 2010, and I have a long list of videos that I produced on Sasquatch and other subjects that would occupy your time, and I'm sure you can enjoy them.
Well, all right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. I hope you're right about something really coming to light this year in 2015.
Yeah, I'm sure hoping for it.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and we'll talk to you next month.
Okay, thanks a lot, Chuck.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
And now, a word from New American Dream radio show psychologist Dr. Fran Z. Friend, sponsored by Your Oath. Oatmeal, because it's freaking good for you, that's why. Government propagandists want you to hate conspiracy theories, but according to a growing body of evidence, you'd have to be crazy to obey. Two American professors, Lance DeHaven Smith and James Tracy, have pointed out that the CIA has weaponized the terms conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist to conceal government misdeeds. CIA document 1035-960, revealed by the New York Times in 1976, is the smoking gun. That secret document was distributed by the CIA in response to widespread skepticism surrounding the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It ordered the CIA's thousands of Operation Mockingbird media assets to begin squawking insults. Those targeted included historians, journalists, and researchers who had discovered that the JFK assassination was a coup d'etat. Today, the mainstream media has grown even more controlled, and the weaponized conspiracy theory meme has been deployed more massively than ever before, especially since the coup d'etat of September 11, 2001. During the past 13 years, thousands and millions, now billions of people have awakened to the 9/11 inside job. Polls show that more than 1 billion Muslims, nearly 1 billion Chinese, as well as one-third of Americans and large proportions of Europeans all view 9/11 as a likely false flag operation, as a new global majority calls the 9/11 myth into question. Panicking propagandists have attempted to stop the contagion by medicalizing the search for truth. According to government-sponsored mind control operatives like John A. Banas and Gregory Miller, University of Oklahoma's third-rate epigons of Edward Bernays and Joseph Goebbels, the truth epidemic must be stopped through inoculation of the public. In inducing resistance to conspiracy theory propaganda, testing inoculation and meta-inoculation strategies, Bannis and Miller brandish a medical metaphor to disguise the fact that they are advocating mass mind control in service to high treason and crimes against humanity. Bannis and Miller spin their anti-conspiracy theory inoculation program as a public health measure, but evidence cited by mental health professionals, including Francis Shore, MALPC, suggests the opposite is the case. By trying to inject the public with an unconscious emotional block to impede rational consideration of the evidence surrounding 9/11, Bannis and Miller are, in fact, undermining public health.
And now we hear from New American Dream radio show, radio doctor and staff fitness specialist, Dr. Tinman. Dr. Tinman says, recently, while riding the Q101 bus during rush hour, I found it interesting and kind of fun to watch the driver interact with his regular passengers, but one exchange really stood out. A weary man, maybe in his mid-60s, labored his way up the steps and onto the bus. The driver remarked with a chuckle, "Two more days." These simple words seemed to make the tired man, along with a few other worn-out commuters, nod and smile with hope. You see, it was Wednesday, and these folks were essentially wishing away 48 hours of their meager time on Earth so they could have permission to do what they really want to do on the weekend. As for what they do with such free time, I'll get to that in a moment. Let's first consider how intensely and relentlessly we're all conditioned. That's life, and you can't win them all, and take the good with the bad, and hey, it could always be worse. We endlessly settle for less pain instead of demanding more pleasure. It's always been like this, I'm told ad nauseum. You can't fight City Hall, and besides, it's never going to change. After a while, if you're not vigilant, it all starts to sink in, and far too many of us willingly embrace mediocrity, even boredom, while ignoring or endorsing avoidable atrocities. Our humanity and our capacity for critical thought are relentlessly pounded out of us. No wonder it's so damn easy to not only get us to buy into this culture, but also convince us to defend it with our very lives. As the situationists used to say, the real state secret is the misery of everyday life. Which brings me back to the concept of free time. I worked in a variety of gyms and health clubs for much of my adult life, and while exercise crazes and workout fashions may come and go, one disturbing trend endures each and every day. I witness some of my fellow humans spend hour after hour wandering the premises. Sure, they do some semblance of a workout, but mostly they talk, or people watch, or yak on their cell phones, or drink coffee, or read the newspaper, or most commonly, stare at one of the dozens of televisions. Whenever I point out such a person to a coworker or client, the most common reaction I get is, I guess they've got nothing better to do. Combine this familiar outlook with the two more days concept I mentioned above, and it's pretty damn depressing. How many of us toil at unfulfilling jobs, wishing away the work week so we can have free time, only to discover that we've got nothing better to do? As the situationists used to say, the real state secret is the misery of everyday life. Society at the spectacle. I'd like to remind those who regularly wish away two more days that during those 48 hours, roughly 400,000 acres of rainforest will be destroyed, mostly to create room for pastures and feed crops for doomed cattle. more than 5,000 American children will be born into poverty. About 26 million tons of toxic chemicals will be released across the globe. Somewhere between 300 and 400 plant and animal species will go extinct. Nearly 60,000 children under the age of five will die from preventable causes. At least a quarter million animals will be murdered for food by a global industry that consumes one-third of the planet's land surface and is the top source of human-created greenhouse gases. How do I know all this? Because this, and so much more, is what happens every 48 hours while too many of us are bored because we've got nothing better to do than sit at the gym and watch and rewatch Sports Center highlights. I'd say it's time to reinvent everyday life, steal it back from corporate propagandists, and reintroduce the joy of living. We can provoke dramatic changes simply by refusing to submit to the societal formula we're presented with. Sometimes all it takes is thoughtful introspection to liberate oneself from the seductive, profit-motivated web and move into the realm of free thinking and individuality. Breaking away from the omnipresent corporate message of work, consume, and obey authority without question can be our way of challenging and smashing the status quo to create a society in which industrial pirates, murderous politicians, and vacuous celebrities are no longer the ideal we strive for. Did you ever notice how many animated people get, how animated people get when you ask them what they'd do if they won the lottery? They can suddenly articulate dreams and wants and desires in a hopeful, confident way. It's as if someone has given them a shot of adrenaline, a new lease on life, if you will. Wouldn't it be neat if we could all get so excited and optimistic about our lives and our future without the promise of some unattainable and unnecessary monetary prize? We know how we feel, so no longer should we allow Hollywood, Madison Avenue, the government, or corporate America to define our needs. Imagine if the majority of us woke tomorrow morning and suddenly recognize that boredom is counter-revolutionary. The best time to start fighting back is now. The best place to start fighting back is here. Imagine if the majority of us woke up tomorrow morning and suddenly recognized all forms of life, including ourselves, as part of one collective soul. If so, how could we not defend that collective soul by any means necessary? With all due respect to the situationists, I'll let you in on the real secret. All our grievances and all our solutions are connected, and we are the ones the planet has been waiting for. New American Dream Radio Show Radio Doctor and Staff Fitness Specialist, Dr. Tin Man. Contact your show to sign up for the weekly newsletter, Because Dr. Tin Man Says, for radio show hosts, journalists, and bus drivers to counteract fat butt people. Our next guest of the evening is Anthony Rayson. Anthony Rayson is a former toll booth operator. He's retired from that job in Chicago, and he's an anarchist, and he is a publisher. He has long, even while he was working as a toll booth worker on Chicago's freeways, he has been in contact with prisoners, and he has got their writing, and he has published their writings. DePaul University holds a special collection of Anthony Rayson's work, and Chuck will be getting Anthony Rayson on the phone just about now. Anthony also runs the South Chicago ABC Zine District.
Hello.
Hello, Anthony. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, good. It's good to talk to y'all. I was sort of thinking on what to talk about. I had a couple different things. One, a couple essays that I'm going to pamphletize. One is entitled "America, Nation of Torturers: Stop Saying This Isn't Who We Are. Here's the Real Truth" by Charles Davis. That's a very insightful analysis. Another one is very pertinent to what's been going on last week. The West manufacturing Muslim monsters. Who should be blamed for Muslim terrorism? By Andrek Vilcek. And then analysis of U.S. involvement, basically supporting the Wahhabism, the supreme reactionary Muslim Islam that is behind most of the Islamic terrorism, which is a reaction to the horrific genocide visited upon them by us in the last several decades, actually. But what I want to talk about is an article written yesterday, put out by Prisoner News, and the title is Record 346 Inmates Died, Dozens of Guards Fired in Florida Prisons. Hmm. 346 inmates die in 1 year. I just did the math. They have, on an average, 100,000 prisoners. So for 346 deaths, that's one death for every 289 inmates last year. Now, you know, Chicago is the capital of murder and all that. It's all over the country. Well, there was about 500 deaths, murders in Chicago in 2014 in a city of 2,750,000 approximately, which translates into one for every 5,500 people, which is a horrible amount. But this, one for every 289, could you imagine? Even if only 100 of these were caused by the guards through beatings or gassings or medical neglect or whatever, that's still one out of 1,000. So give you a little perspective of what's going on here. Anyway, I'll read a little article, part of it, written by Sean King. Nearly all of the countries with relatively high incarceration rates share the experience of recent large-scale internal conflict. But the United States, which has enjoyed a long history of political stability and hasn't had a civil war in nearly a century and a half, tops the list. If we compare the incarceration rates of individual U.S. states and territories with that of other nations, for example, we see that 36 states and the District of Columbia have incarceration rates higher than that of Cuba, which is the nation with the second highest incarceration rate in the world. Now, what we are learning is that the United States is not just imprisoning people at an outrageous pace, but that men and women are dying in these prisons at all-time highs, often at the hands of guards in the most awful and brutal ways imaginable. The state of Florida, it appears, is ground zero for the deaths of prisoners, and the crisis is so deeply corrupt and out of hand, it needs immediate national intervention. In 2014, Florida recorded at least 346 deaths inside of their prison system, an all-time high for the state, in spite of the fact that its overall prison population has hovered around 100,000 people for the previous 5 years. Hundreds of these deaths from 2014 and from previous years are now under investigation by the DOJ because of the almost unimaginable role law enforcement officers are playing in them. Below I will highlight some of the most egregious stories. Jerry Washington filed a sexual harassment complaint against two officers at the Santa Rosa Correctional Institute. A few days later, after the officers learned of the complaint, they threatened to kill him. Jerry filed another complaint with the prison about the death threats. Afraid for his safety, he wrote his sister a letter and included copies of both of the grievances he had filed. You can read the letter and copies of the complaints here. Well, this was online. In the letter, he tells her very clearly that if anything happens to him, she should know that it wasn't an accident. 7 days later, Jerry Washington was killed in prison. According to the Miami Herald, in letters to the family, two of Washington's fellow inmates claimed that several correctional officers warned the inmate they were going to fuck him up when they returned to prison for the weekend shift. They were going to get him that weekend, which would have been a pick-a-nigga Friday, one wrote Washington's family, using a slang version of the N-word. It's a saying that the officers have. It comes from slavery when the master goes to the slave quarters on Friday to pick a nigger to hang. In detail, the inmate whose name is being withheld by the Miami Herald claimed that one of those sergeants placed drugs in Washington's food that day and an orderly served the 5'8" inmate his poison meal that afternoon. By dinner time, Washington was seriously ill, inmates told DOC inspectors. He was found sprawled in his cell at 9:20 p.m. on September 16th. But he was still alive, and officers and other staff reported he was able to sit up and talk. Jerry died a few hours later, and the family has been given few details on what happened after 9 p.m. until he was pronounced dead at 6 a.m. the following day. What isn't redacted from the report is the bulk of statements provided by the DOC's investigator by seven inmates, most of whom told the same story, that Washington feared for his life, and that Sergeant Marcus Stokes, Officer Pugh, and Officer Charles Aspel were conspiring to harm him because he had filed complaints against them. One inmate, Aaron Porter, went further, stating to inspectors that he overheard Stokes, Pugh, and Aspel planning their revenge on September 16th. Before we move on to the next case of the murder of Randall Jordan Apero, Jerry Washington and his fellow inmates in Santa Rosa mentioned in their letters to Jerry's family that they were being gassed by the guards. Jerry thought it might actually cause him to die. Jerry and a fellow inmate both mentioned it here. "I just want you to know how they are planning," Washington wrote. "I got real bad blood pressure, and if they gas me and jump on me, and I happen to have a stroke or a heart attack, don't y'all believe nothing they try to tell y'all." He enclosed copies of the grievances he had sent to the Inspector General's office and told them to call several sexual violence groups, including one in Florida. At the same time, the fellow inmate who was also writing the Washington family about alleged prison abuses and said he had been sexually harassed like Washington. He claimed corrections officers were watching them and making sexual remarks to them in the showers, gassing them for no reason, and refusing to feed them. "I had actually never heard of inmates being gassed before until the death of Randall Jordan Apero. He died completely covered in the gas, his body a tinted orange with stains on it on the walls of his cell, as shown in the picture below." According to the Miami Herald, Randall Jordan Apero died weeping and gasping for breath on the concrete floor of his prison isolation cell, naked except for his white boxer shorts. Incensed that he had cursed at a nurse, guards at Franklin Correctional Institution in the Panhandle fired 9 blasts of noxious gas into his 13-by-8 cell through a slot in the door and ultimately left him there sobbing. "I can't breathe. I can't take it no more. Please help me," he pleaded. 5 hours later, the 27-year-old was found lifeless, face down in the Barb's lab. His mouth and nose were pressed to the bottom of the door as if trying to gulp fresh air through the thin crack. His hair, legs, torso, toes, and mouth were dusted with a faint orange residue, a byproduct of the gas. A paperback Bible was under his shoulder. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement sent 2 investigators to look into what had occurred. Their conclusion, summarized in 1 paragraph, the disciplinary actions taken by guards had no bearing on the death. "They just said he got sick," Jordan Sparrow's father, Thomas Sparrow, recalled being told by corrections officers. "This happens constantly, and I get letters from guy in the midst of being murdered, basically, you know, crying out for someone to help him stop what's going on. And, you know, in a feeble way, I try, I call, you know, the corrections officers and whatnot. Nothing ever seems to happen, except I find out they're dead later on." Hearing these claims, inspectors from the state began looking into the case right away. After reporting their findings, they began suffering retaliation themselves almost immediately. They interviewed inmates, studied the use of force report, the video captured by surveillance cameras, audio of the incident, and photographs of Jordan Aparo's body. Among their findings, claim by prison staffers that Jordan Aparo was being disorderly before his death was false. Initial reports downplayed the fact that Jordan Aparo was complaining about experiencing extreme pain and simply wanted medical attention, preferably in a hospital. Contrary to claims that his cell had been decontaminated after the gassing, photos clearly showed residue everywhere, orange smears on the floor, in the sink, and in the toilet bowl. There was a dense orange cloud above the bunk where Jordan Aparo would have sat. Although reports said Jordan Aparo was issued a fresh set of clothing after the gassing, he was dressed only in dirty, orange-stained boxers. Nobody assigned to investigate the matter administratively for the Department of Corrections watched the use of force video showing Jordan Aparo being gassed. Their conclusion, Jordan Aparo died as a result of medical negligence and the sadistic retaliatory use of chemical agents on a sick and helpless inmate who did nothing wrong. And that staff report follows the death containing inconsistencies, errors, omissions, and outright lies. Well, it goes on and on. This happens pandemically across the country in every state. Sadists run these camps. Often they're coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, having done the same over there. What kind of skills do these people have? They're trained to kill people and torture people. And that's what they get jobs doing. And in this Orwellian society we live in, the allegedly and, you know, on the face of it, treated as heroes for being in the armed forces. And every time you watch a sports event, you have to go through this nationalistic fawning over the military. And this is where it ends up as just disgusting murders behind the barbed wires that that hardly ever get reported. Oh, yeah, they fired a few dozen of these guards. But you get just fired for murdering somebody? It's just beyond reprehensible. I just don't understand why people don't realize that this thing is going on constantly. As if a murder here and there is so shocking. Well, these choking deaths, these gassings, these beatings, these shootings, these tasings, these electrocutions, they're murdered in all manner of ways. And the medical neglect is just horrific, the way they have to suffer through their cancers or their preventable injuries or conditions that they have. They never get treated properly, and they just die like flies. It's horrible. The women maybe even have it worse as far as medical neglect is concerned, because their needs are different, and it's even less reported what goes on in the women prisons. While Reuters reported that 32 prison guards and officers were fired across the state this past September related to dozens of cases of abuse, corruption, and death, one should lose a lot more than the job for poisoning, gassing, or beating inmates to death. This is not enough. It's not even close to being enough. These officers should be indicted and convicted of murder and given the stiffest penalty allowed under law. They've not only abused their power, they've abused it at the expense of citizens who were virtually defenseless in our country. It's unacceptable. And these two cases, one guy had 1 month to serve on a drug case, drug possession case. The other had 7 more months. With the hope that it motivates you to push the cause of prison reform and justice for the officers who murdered these men and women, I'd like to tell you the story of Darren Rainey. 50 years old, battling mental illness, and serving 2 years in the psychiatric ward of the Dade County Prison for the victimless nonviolent offense of cocaine possession without the intent to distribute, Darren Rainey would soon experience a death so cruel and so violent and so unthinkable, unthinkably heinous, that we would expect such a thing to happen only in a country governed by so-called evil dictators. It's almost too ugly to type. After allegedly defecating in his cell, Rainey was handcuffed and locked into a tight shower cell and blasted for nearly 2 hours with water that was over 180 scalding hot degrees in temperature, begging for his life, screaming apologies and remorse so loud that other inmates could hear them. The officers kept the water so hot and forceful that the steam began to melt off Darren Rainey's skin. Video shows Rainey forced into the shower. He was pronounced dead at 9:30.
Anthony, it's run out of time, but wow, that was grim. But thank you so much for sharing those with us, and we'll talk
all right
next month.
All right, take care. Good night.
And now from Port Orange, Florida, who stopped at Information Clearinghouse, Nation of Change, Truth Out, World News Trust, Intrepid Report, Dissident Voice, and many others. Phil Ferruccio presents, It's the Empire, Stupid!
Good evening, Working Stiffs. By any other name, terrorism sucks. The events that happened in Paris last week are terrible. And the worldwide indignation against terrorism is well received. But let me just say this, okay? When a suicide bomber blows away the lives of students and other civilians in an Israeli cafe, my eyes fill with tears. When Israeli Apache helicopters blast away the lives of innocent Palestinians, more tears flow. You see, terrorism has no parameters. It sucks, no matter who does the killing and who does the dying. The overkill of the cities of Dresden and Tokyo with incendiary WMDs was just as ghastly as the Rape King and the carpet bombing of London. In any war, to destroy the lives of civilian noncombatants is terrorism, plain and simple. Yet, my fellow Americans, many of them, most of them, could not give a rat's ass for what our military has done in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Libya, to name but a few such places. When we illegally and immorally invaded Iraq, how many little 8-year-old boys were blown away by our smart bombs through what war criminal Donald Rumsfeld called collateral damage. How many such children have been destroyed by the drone attacks in Afghanistan and Pakistan under Mr. Obama's watch? One wonders if my neighbors, the ones who brag to me about how the drones are fighting terrorism in a more rational and humane way, would pause for a moment and play what if. What if each neighbor who supports these drones, let us say in Pakistan, had a son or daughter who married a Pakistani and moved to Pakistan to raise a family with their new spouse? One night, the call comes in that a village was droned, and sadly, their child and their new grandchild were victims of collateral damage. I love my country. I fear and protest its leaders and their policies. My country, sadly, has become the worst purveyor of terrorism in the entire world. I think it was Martin Luther King who made that statement or similar statement in 1967. Nothing has changed. Yet few of us got out on the street corners and town squares protesting what we did to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan some 12, 13 years ago. Look how we continue to terrorize through our illegal and immoral occupations. What in the hell are we doing in all those countries of the world with our military bases and our weapons systems? Cannot the good people of our great nation begin to connect the death of the poor boy in Boston, the 8-year-old a couple years ago, or the people in Paris a week ago, with the countless dead children of Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and Pakistan? We never give those dead kids names so as to remember them. We never show their dead and bloody dangling body parts in our media. Some still refer to them as ragheads or Arabs, a subhumanity, as the Germans refer to the Jews of Europe, and many Israelis see the Palestinians. Ironic, isn't it? Maybe it's really very disgusting. If we truly wish to see peace in this world, let our great and most powerful nation take the first step. Let us get the hell out of the 100 countries we have over 900 bases in. Let our Congress cut this obscene military spending drastically. Let us have the decency and courage to go to the United Nations and acknowledge the past deeds committed by our leaders and our military. And finally, let us understand that terrorism by any means is wrong and against whatever God you say you believe in. Thank you.
I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Now for your local Earth news. Hello, everyone. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. A former governor of Virginia is expected to be sentenced to a long stay in prison. The same fate has befallen governors in states across the United States, including in nearby Maryland, Tennessee, and West Virginia. A former governor of Illinois is in prison. Governors have been convicted of corruption in Rhode Island, Louisiana, Oklahoma, North Dakota, Connecticut, and also in Alabama.
Locking U.S. presidents up for their crimes, a different story. Former President Richard Nixon's understanding that whatever a president does is legal has not been challenged since he made that comment. The Washington Post has the same understanding now. The Post recently justified the latest proposal to re-ban torture by explaining that even though torture was already banned, President George W. Bush tortured and therefore had found a legal way around the law. In other words, because he hasn't been prosecuted, what he did was legal.
The New York Times, which urged prosecuting former President George W. Bush for torture 6 years ago, recently wrote this. Who should be held accountable? That will depend on what an investigation finds. And as hard as it is to imagine Mr. Obama having the political courage to order a new investigation, it is harder to imagine a criminal probe of the actions of a former president. But any credible investigation should include. The editorial goes on to list the people who should be prosecuted up to and including the former vice president. But the president gets a pass. Not on the basis of some reasoned argument, but because the authors cannot imagine a president being held accountable for crimes. they or their colleagues could imagine it several years ago, but it progressed to the point where it has become unthinkable.
The state flag of Virginia or any other of the 50 states can be turned into a tablecloth or a picnic blanket. It can be used to keep the rain off your firewood, or it can be burned to get your fire started. Nobody cares what you do with it. Children aren't forced to pray to it every morning in school. It's just a flag. And because it's just a flag, nobody has any interest in abusing it, and virtually nobody would recognize what it was if they saw it burned or trampled or turned into a bathrobe or a bikini. The flag of Virginia, although we don't actually imagine it as having feelings, is treated just fine. So are state songs. Nobody's required to stand and sing them with a fascistic pose as troops march by. Same true of state governors. They're treated with civility and respect. They're honored when they perform well and held accountable when they abuse power. Understood as human beings. They aren't abused as anything less. But they're not gods. And they're not gods because they are not makers of war.
Presidents make war, and they now do so without any formal checks on their power. They can destroy the earth with the push of a button. They can destroy a hut or a village or a city at their discretion. Their killer flying robots rain hell from the skies worldwide, and neither Congress nor the Washington Post nor the people who lock up governors for taking bribes can even imagine questioning that power, that privilege, that divine right. But if murdering large numbers of people doesn't disturb us, if we've all concluded that murder is morally superior to imprisonment and torture, and that there is no third option, are we perhaps capable of spotting a problem in what presidents have become in relation to the rule of law?
Should it not disturb us that we've given single individuals for 4 or 8 year runs more power than King George III ever dreamed of, and that we've collectively declared any declaration of independence unimaginable?
That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck. It is what it is, and so it goes. Stay classy, Tallahassee. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, it is what it is. Have a good day. Bring something to the table, and always remember to tip your congressman. Our next guest of the night is Larry Pinkney. Larry Pinkney is a veteran of the Black Panther Party, the former Minister of Interior of the Republic of New Africa, a former political prisoner, and the only American to have successfully self-authored his civil political rights case to the UN under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. In connection with his political organizing activities, Pinkney was interviewed in 1988 on the nationally televised PBS NewsHour, formerly known as the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour. And more recently on the nationally syndicated Alex Jones Show. Pinkney is a former university instructor of political science and international relations, and his writings have been published in various places, including the Boston Globe, San Francisco Bayview newspaper, Black Commentator, Trepid Report, and Global Research. He is in the archives of Dr. Huey P. Newton, Stanford University, co-founder of the Black Panther Party. For more about Larry Pinkney, see the book, Saying No to Power, Autobiography of a 20th Century Activist and Thinker by William Mandel. And he speaks to us each month from Minneapolis.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, thank you so much to both you, Chuck, and to Mike. Look, thank you very, very much. And I want to say that I am honored and delighted. Let's get on. Let's get down. All right. Today being January the 15th, Thursday, 2015. And yes, we made it to the year 2015. Let's hope we can save Mother Earth and make it through about at least 100 more years for the planet, for the people. Anyway, there's something I would like to remind everyone about, And that is that struggle, political struggle, for black, white, brown, red, and yellow people is a long and protracted struggle. It's long. It's not like Hollywood portrays it. It doesn't happen overnight. Never has, never will. All right? And I want to actually bring up someone that I think everyone should really know about. And the person's name, he happens to be a reverend, Reverend Edward Pinckney. Yes, he has the same last name as mine, but we are not biologically related. But Reverend Edward Pinckney, P-I-N-K-N-E-Y, has been a long-time political activist in the township of Benton Harbor, Berrien County, Michigan. I call it Benton Harbor, Berrien County, Mississippi. But anyway, the point is that he has been fighting against specifically corruption and control by the powers that be. Specifically, let me be very specific, Whirlpool Corporation. Now, folks, please listen to this. Whirlpool Corporation. Don't buy products from Whirlpool Corporation. Whirlpool Corporation is, in fact, headquartered in Benton Harbor, Berrien County, Michigan. I almost said Mississippi, but it's the same thing. And what they do is they control the entire judicial system. They control the police. That's why I call it Mississippi. Mississippi from the 1950s and 60s, all right? And Reverend Edward Pinckney, again, I want to point out, no, we are not biologically related, and that's irrelevant, really. But this brother has been standing up and fighting the powers for over two decades. He's now in prison. They charged him with, quote, voter fraud, all right, and convicted him with no evidence. I repeat, no evidence. They had no direct evidence. But the judge told the jury it doesn't matter. And oh, by the way, oh, did I forget to say this? The jury was all white. Not even two or three African-Americans, black Americans on the jury. Now, why do I say that? Well, Benton Harbor, Michigan, is between 90 to 96% black American or African-American. I prefer black American, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, and excuse me, they couldn't find two or three people who were African-Americans or black Americans to put on that jury. Of course, it was already preordained, if you will, that Reverend Edward Pinckney is his name, was going to be convicted, and they were going to try to shut him up and put him in prison. And that's exactly what has occurred thus far, though they haven't really shut him up. But on December 15th, this last month, which was a Monday, the judge, Schrock, you know, what this judge did, he didn't even hear the motion, and I'll explain the motion later. He sentenced the Reverend Pinckney to 2.5 to 10 years in prison. First of all, that was absurd because all he was charged with was supposedly changing dates and or names on a recall election, which Whirlpool Corporation and their proxy, another... and I got to say this, a proxy, this is not a color thing. It's not about so-called race. It's not a color thing. Their proxy happens to be the mayor of Benton Harbor, Michigan, who is biologically black. But you see, it doesn't matter. Sellouts how can I put it, diplomatic. Well, I'm not very diplomatic, so I won't even try to be. The point is that this mayor, James Hightower, has been a proxy, a tool, a lackey for Whirlpool Corporation for a number of years. And so what they do is they pick folks, just like they pick Barack Obama, and they put him in the office and say, now you do what we say. And, oh, yes, yeah, I'll do that, sure. Doesn't matter what their color or their gender is. Anyway, long story short, we all need to be deeply concerned about this because it affects us all. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. It affects us all. We cannot allow this outrageous injustice to stand. We cannot allow this. I'm calling on all my brothers and sisters, all my sisters and brothers, to stand up and say, we're not going to tolerate it. Now, Reverend Pinckney just yesterday was transferred from one prison to another in Michigan. He's now, he was first in Jackson, Michigan, which is an entire prison town. He's now in Marquette. That's M-A-R-Q-U-E-T-T-E. M-A-R-Q-U-E-T-T-E. He's at Marquette Branch Prison, okay, which is located at 1960. That's 1960 U.S. Highway, 41 South. 1960 U.S. Highway, 41 South, Marquette, Michigan. And the zip code is 49855. 49855. This man has been fighting the corrupt, blood-sucking, avaricious corporation, specifically Whirlpool, as I said, for over two decades. Write to this brother. Write to Reverend Pinckney. And by the way, when you write, make sure you put his prisoner number. His prisoner number is 294-671. Again, 294-671. Write to him. Let him know that he does not stand alone. Let him know that black, white, brown, red, and yellow people throughout this nation and throughout Mother Earth stand with him, and we're going to bring him home. We're going to bring him home, and we're going to put him back to work doing what he's always done for the past over two decades, all right? So if I sound a little bit fired up about this, I am, because this is yet another outrageous injustice. What an indignity against people of all colors and both genders. We cannot allow this. Write to Reverend Edward Pinckney. Write to him. You know, prisoner number 294-671, Marquette Branch Prison, 1960 U.S. Highway, 41 South, Marquette, Michigan, zip code 49855. Write to him. Let him know that he's not alone. He's not alone. And we are going to stand with him. We are going to stand with each other. That's what this struggle is all about. Nobody who is telling the truth ever said that the struggle would be easy or short. This struggle is neither easy nor is it short. But we have to stand together because no one of us is as strong or as smart as all of us. I want to repeat that. No one of us is as strong or as smart as all of us together. That's what this is about. So I just really, really wanted to go there this evening. And I want to compliment and thank the listening audience. It's such a privilege, you know, Chuck and Mike, it's such a privilege to be able to give my commentary on the show every month. You brothers are doing a fantastic job, and I'm honored to be able to do this. I also want folks to understand and to think about the horrible atrocity that took place in Paris and this past month. But I want you to think about the fact, just give it some thought. Was this a false flag attack? It might have been, all right? Think about it. Was it a false flag attack? And by false flag, I mean, who was really behind it? You know, it's all about divide and conquer, divide and rule, all right? It's not about Muslim. It's not about Christian. It's not about Judaism. It's not about Hindu. It's not about, you know, I could go on and on and on. What it is about for all of us has to be everyday, ordinary, struggling people of all colors, both genders, and all ethnicities to come to the realization that this struggle is about just us everyday ordinary people, not big corporations like Lockheed or Goldman Sachs or any of those blood-sucking, avaricious corporations on Wall Street. Not about that. It's about us. We need to define the narrative. I'm going to repeat that. We need to define the narrative. It has got to be the everyday, ordinary people's narrative. It's us. It's about us. We must define us. We must struggle together. Yes, we will have differences. We should have differences. We don't want to have robots. But like Brother Malcolm X said, when we have our differences, we're going to have them in the closet. All right, euphemistically, metaphorically speaking. But when we come out, we're going to come out as a united people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. We're going to come out united. And that's the beauty and the power of the people. I remember back in the day when, as a veteran of the Black Panther Party, the original, not to be confused with the so-called new Black Panther Party, but as a veteran of the original Black Panther Party, we had a slogan, which I still believe in today, and that slogan said, all power to the people, black, white, brown, red, yellow, all power to the people in this nation and throughout Mother Earth. So I'm a little fired up. I've been talking to many, many people, both nationally and internationally. And like I said, it is a true honor to be on the program. And I don't know, have I've probably gone past my time, Chuck.
Well, you've just used it up. I hear the music coming now. Thank you for your kind words to us and your strong words to all of us, to our listeners.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. All power to the people. Thank you. Take care.
And now, a message in a Boone Farm bottle. Some notes we have been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. From Uncle Joe in Hootersville in downtown L.A., we hear, two protesters were arrested at the McLean, Virginia home of former Vice President Dick Cheney after 20 demonstrators, some in orange prison jumpsuits, walked onto his property to mark the 14th anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo Bay Prison. The protesters from the anti-war group Code Pink walked up to the house before police arrived and asked them to leave, said Fairfax County Police spokesman Roger Enriquez. Two members who refused to go were arrested on trespassing charges, he said. Police identified the two as Ty Berry, 57, and Eve Tatans, 83, both of Washington, D.C. The pair faced misdemeanor charges of trespassing and disorderly conduct, police said. Another Code Pink group demonstrated without incident outside the home of CIA Director John Brennan, also in the Washington, D.C. suburb of McLean, as part of its Guantanamo anniversary weekend torturous tour. A U.S. Senate report last month said the CIA misled the White House and public about its torture of detainees after the September 11, 2001 attacks and acted more brutally and pervasively than it acknowledged. Cheney has defended the CIA's use of harsh interrogation techniques on terrorism suspects in the aftermath of Al-Qaeda's hijacked plane attacks, which killed more than 3,000 people in New York and Washington. The prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, was opened in January 2002 to house suspected militants and still holds 127 detainees, despite President Barack Obama's pledge to close the facility.
A message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we've been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. And now we join the continuing saga of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. We join our show with Mr. Smith in one big hurry, wrapping his 12-gauge in the red robe he got for Christmas. On his way out the back door, the screen door slamming to the family cream-colored station wagon headed to Washington, skidding out, throwing up dust and smoke all over Mrs. Smith's clothesline. Stay tuned next week when we see what happens when Mr. Smith from small town suburbia has finally passed enough. Make sure to tune in this summer for these new shows on CBS with hostess Vanna White
all blonde and wearing a bright cherry red dress. Conspiracy theorist is the new communist. The CTs are coming. The CTs are coming. Watch as we hunt them down one by one. Sponsored by Red Bull, Red Dawn 3, the John Reed Foundation, Red Delicious Apples, Reddit, Red Alert, Code Red, Red October, Red Lobster, the Mitchell Palmer Foundation, the Cincinnati Reds, and the Boston Red Sox. And also on CBS, the new all-male version of The View. Being an American means never having to say you're a war criminal, with hosts Henry Kissinger, George Bush Sr., Jr., Bill Clinton, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Karl Rove, and Barack Obama. It's all right here on CBS.
Well, it's been another long week in Duluth, Minnesota, my hometown, at the end of the empire. Duluth is a microbrewery of what is going on everywhere, where the people fight to have some sort of say. And leave it to the outlaws to come up with something. Leave it to the guys in the jails and carrying skateboards, leaning up against a light pole at 2 a.m. to come up with something. It's the home of Tiger McNugget, Carol Kopech, Frosty Pine, Winnie Budfeather, some 23 toy villains, Diamond Griffin, and Penny Jones. We continue our story, the inauguration parade for Mayor Mary Pine, and watching the parade, Penny Jones. Penny Jones was going to kill the new liberal mayor, but it seems someone got there before him. Penny has climbed onto the flatbed and finds himself the one helping her as she struggles for life.
Penny held Mary tight with both arms. Doctors, nurses, and gurneys waited for them at the front double-glass door. Everything waited, quiet. They stopped with a jolt and clang. The noise rushed in like a dam burst. Everyone jumped up, climbed onto the float. Penny helped them lower her down. Careful, watch her head. Easy now. They were about to whisk her away when she gripped Penny's arm strong enough to stop time. She looked him straight in the eyes. Thank you, she said. Then she was gone. Penny stood outside on the walk and watched her be swallowed up by the doors and the people and the excitement and history. He looked at his hands covered, down at his clothes, his shirt pulled back by sticky blood, showing his gun and his knife still in the holster in cheek. He closed his eyes for a moment in relief, took a deep breath. Yanked the stocking cap from his head, wiped his hands the best he could, and stuffed it into a back pocket. A microphone poked him in the cheek, and he leaned away, not knowing he was supposed to talk. A reporter with pad and frightened eyes blocked his path. That night, he sat in his home in the dark, two of his dogs at his feet, drinking his first beer, watching himself on television. Yes, I was there, right there. I saw her head explode. I guess, sorry, that's what it seemed like to me. Yes, I saw everything. This isn't my ring. Penny Jones sat at the end of a long table addressing his first aid class. That's exactly what he said when he woke up, Penny said, rubbing at his own missing ring finger. They'd reattached somebody else's finger. He smiled, and the class chuckled together. The fat young man who worked overnight at one of the company group homes, sitting at Penny's left, was ready with another question. In front of him sat the morning newspaper with the banner headline, "Hey, who killed Mary Pine?" "My grandfather had a hole in his tongue. How would you apply direct pressure on that?" "Well, very carefully," Penny smiled. "I really don't know. I don't have all the answers." He held his smile, remembering one more story. EMTs will come across all sorts of things. Teeth sticking through lips. I remember one call to the cabaret. What about when you jumped on the float, said the fat young man. What about that? Aren't you supposed to make sure the scene is safe before you go in? Well, there could have been more shooters. Yes, but yes, I suppose. What'd she say when you were up there? You were the last one she saw alive, they said. What'd she say? Penny stared down the table between two lines of group home workers out the window at the big plate. He shook his head. Nothing, he thought. He shook his head again, stared. He doesn't wish to discuss it, said an older woman. What did she say? Said the young man. What happened next then? Then he left his trance. Told them how the unit could arrive almost at once, it seemed, and how he'd gone along the Northland General. Right on the float, someone said. He stared out the window. Were you there when she died? Asked a young woman with purple and black hair. Oh, she was already... Yes, I was there. They said it was in the ER. There were lots of people there. He arranged the pamphlets and notes in front of them. Well, we've still... He looked behind him at the clock on the wall. We've still got to talk about Lyme disease, dehydration. Did you know that as a member of the Marathon medical team, we have seen projectile vomiting up to 10 feet? That's a ton of puke, said the fat young man. Who do you think did it, said one of the dozen or so group home workers. Penny couldn't see their faces with the sun glaring through the window. There's no way of knowing, he said. Why? It's been so long. I haven't worked at the Marathon for almost 3 years. I just can't remember. Mayor Mary Pine! He folded his hands on the tabletop. You're really not supposed to discuss cases, he said. The finger, the broken ribs, the detached head, and you said you were going to tell us about a frozen body, said the fat young man, just before he put an enormous paw over a yawn and stretched his other arm far enough to cause the young woman next to him to duck. And you weren't really on duty with the mayor then, huh? Said the young woman as she dodged the fat young arm. What if someone got a needle or a screwdriver in their eye, someone said from the far end of the table. Leave it in, said Penny. They say she had a pirate flag earring. Did you see it? No. You know that they're telling us now not to use direct pressure? Penny looked at his notes and saw Mary Pine's face. They're going back to tourniquets. I don't know why. I suppose with Homeland Security and all these wars. I was pretty fond of direct pressure. Anyway, we have to teach it. He got up and pulled a piece of cloth from his bag, which also contained CPR dummies, blue plastic gloves, other assorted supplies. He asked the fat young man to hold out his arm and began showing the class how to make a tourniquet. Using a wooden spoon, he tightened the cloth on the fat young man's arm. Penny told the class in the meantime that saving someone's life is not like in a classroom. There's blood everywhere. Vomit, crap, and piss. People are scouting, pulling at you. Not like this. That's why secure the scene is not as ridiculous as it sounds now. That's getting tight, the fat young man grinned. I was going to tell you about the frozen body, Penny said. And broken ribs and a detached head. Yeah, said the fat young man, his face turning red. As he turned the spoon slowly, Penny told the class, you know, how when the spring comes and the snow and the ditches begins to melt, the carcasses of deer sprout. Well, this time, he said. Is that getting tight here? The fat young man nodded. Good, it's supposed to. He turned the spoon some more. It was Well, you remember, right? Somebody, I guess they don't know if it was a man or a woman, walked into a Forever Young fitness center, right? He turned the spoon, another quarter turned, and the fat young man howled. I'm saving your life, man, remember? Said Penny Jones to the fat young man with one knee on the floor. And the guy, a young guy, maybe a girl, holding a gun, yells out, asks who's watching Fox News on their workout television, and a few people raise their hands. Then he asks, who here works for the prison or the Air Force? And some of the guys lifting weights raise their hands. And he twisted the spoon, and the fat young man went to both knees, sweating, his face blue. But of course, he wasn't just holding the gun up where everyone could see it, was he? Some of those up and down the line on both sides of the table shook their heads. No, it was winter, and it was under his coat. Well, he shot those people with their hands raised, and then he left. He released the wooden spoon. The fat young man flopped to his hands and knees and puffed. Saving a life can be messy. It's serious business. You didn't really save her, though, right? Said the fat young man from his back on the floor. She died. Penny stood still, his fingertips touching the table, thinking of how he might seriously injure the fat young man. Whether that body they found in the ditch in the spring was that same man or girl, we don't know. The crows and eagles had already gotten to the body, but there was a pirate earring inside this skull. I know the deputy who found the body. Kind of interesting. Are there any other questions? Everyone began to move, gather things. Do you want these? Someone held up an evaluation form. Yes, please, pass those forward, said Penny. Much obliged. A young, oriental-looking woman sat at the far end of the table, her hands on the table, not moving. Who killed Mayor Mary Pine, she said, loud enough to stop people from moving and shuffling papers to look at her and then at Penny Jones. He looked around at everyone to see if he really had to answer that. Well, he began, they said it was Robert Lund and Winnie Bloodfeather and probably BTK shot Mary Pine. Do you believe that? Said someone already halfway out the door. He looked down at his hand, shuffling the papers. Sounds good. He looked up. I guess. I don't know.
That's the news from Duluth, Minnesota, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average.
Well, that's almost it for tonight's show. A show was inspired by heroes, Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, Philip Berrigan, Roy Bourgeois, Larry Rosebaugh, Bill Hicks, George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Leonard Peltier, Charles Bukowski, Julia Butterfly Hill, Phil Blackolive, Anthony Rayson, Carl Cabot, Helen Woodson, Eugene Debs, Lucy Parsons, Dorothy Day, Laurie Berenson, Daryl Ruhpiper, David Ray Griffin, William Pepper, Thomas Paine, Marilyn Buck, Kevin McGuire, Cesar Chavez, Jim Fetzer, Jerry Webb, David Gilbert, Rachel Corey, Ann Montgomery, Frank Cordero, Kevin Barrett, Robert Kennedy. And also inspired by villains, Barack Obama, the CIA, lying, telling us that Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. Bill Clinton, the drug runner, the fake liberal who would not pardon Leonard Peltier. who cut welfare, who bombed Yugoslavia, who burned children alive at Waco, who remains as phony as a $4 bill. The FBI, Janet Reno, Bill Clinton, burning people alive at Waco. Lon Horiuchi, the FBI sniper who shot Vicki Weaver in the doorway at Ruby Ridge. Harry Truman, who bombed Hiroshima. Paul Tibbetts, the pilot of the plane that bombed Hiroshima. Taxes, billions of dollars for the military, while reducing spending on human needs, giving us no choice but to pay for the military, giving young men no choice but whether to register for the draft. Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, Rove, Rice, Card, Gonzalez, Fleischer, Powell, all names that if history ever writes itself will be synonymous with Goebbels, Goering, Himmler, Hess, Eichmann, Hillary Clinton. How many people have you and your husband murdered? What happened to Vince Foster? Is that what it takes to gain power in the United States? And then when you get that power, then you'll do something good. Well, when's that going to happen? How about now? Now? Could it be now? Bush, the younger idiot, was not really the president. He lied and lied and was stupid and lied and was stupid and killed Americans on 9/11 and lied and lied and lied. And is stupid. George H.W. Bush, who helped to murder JFK, who killed thousands in the invasion of Panama, who did so many things to help himself and hurt others, who's just an incredible, though largely unknown, invisible American person. Barbara Bush, who looks like George Washington reincarnated. I know, right? Henry Kissinger, for all the reasons everyone knows about war in Vietnam and killing good people in Chile, all for power, and we wonder what that power will do for him when he is dead. Just saying. Hundreds of United States military bases overseas that are paid for by the tax dollars of hardly working Americans and that are for no good reason except power and American business and the wealth. That's pretty much. Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and Lyndon Johnson in hell. NPR, National Public Radio, what the hell happened there anyway? They used to report on hunger strikes live at Marion Federal Prison. Now they interview generals and ask them, how cool will a coming war be anyway? NPR, may your fundraising please go on forever unanswered. You have no heart, no soul, no guts. How can you expect to survive? John Stewart, the liberal funny man with a huge forum that he will not use for 9/11 Truth or Boston or Sandy Hook because he's a pussy apparently and just likes his big important life more than the truth. Stephen Colbert, the liberal funny man with a huge forum that he will not use for 9/11 Truth or Boston or Sandy Hook because he's a pussy apparently and likes his big important life more than the truth. Brian Williams of the Nightly News. The Nightly News? What? Amy Goodman, Noam Chomsky, liberal bloggers who for some reason can't tell you the truth. The Nation, the Progressive Magazine. Where is the truth? Good people look to you for the truth and you've failed. Don't seek to live so long that you finally have to be unplugged. Tell whoever is telling you what you can say to shove it. And be what you always thought you were, at least for 1 second. United States Marines, the few, the proud. United States Navy, a global force for good. The U.S. Army, be all you can be. Because, well, we could never tell you the truth. We have many more, but we're about out of time here. So let me thank you all for joining us tonight. And we hope you'll be back next week and every week listening to what we believe about the new American dream. We broadcast 6 to 8 p.m. every week on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And don't forget they're listener supported, so see what you can do for them. We had a great lineup of guests tonight. Thank each and every one of you. And especially, I'd like to thank you, Mike. Good night.
Thanks to our guests, Phil Ferruccio, Anthony Rayson, Larry Pickney, M.K. Davis. To get the archives of the show from February 2011, go to theshow.newamericandream.info. And as always, we wish to acknowledge the work of South Dakota stone artisan Borglum Borglumson as he works to make over Mount Rushmore, put the real face of American history up there in stone. Lee Harvey Oswald, Sir Hans Rang, Mark David Chapman, and James Earl Ray. Follow the ongoing project at loserock.com, rollingstones.com, and Jack Ruby, rubyridge.com. To help support the show, please purchase one of our Tom Jefferson Rolling in His Grave Handy Campfire rotisseries for the hobo in your family, or get one of our family-sized Obamaville Tom Jefferson rotisseries for the busy family on the move from town to town, woods to woods, made in Korea. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes and plan to make your mistakes next week. To contact the show, either Chuck or me or any of our guests, write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. And good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And so good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lane. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Crystal Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Sotloff. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.